Accession number 8171, reel 13.
Mr. Metalman, reel 13. What happened next?
Well, it was a general moving backwards, kind of controlled, but it still seems chaotic. We always tried at night to get into some sort of a village, because one could sleep in a house. That was very important for us. And we were pretty tough about that. When there were Russians in there, we sometimes threw them out, and they had to go to some other cottage, I suppose. But then again, that must be understood under the conditions we were living then and fighting then. We had to have our proper protection against the weathers, and we had to be tough about it. And if we would have taken too much consideration of the comforts of the Russian peasant population, well, we would have done ourselves harm. At least that's how we looked at it. Now, I remember one quite an interesting incident. The Romanians, of course, they were part of the retreating German forces, and they were very, to say disappointed is perhaps the wrong word. We were still rather disciplined in our ways. But the Romanians, they were in a very undisciplined state, to say the least. And I heard about that some of them had been shot, that there had been a kind of a mutiny. And I can understand that, or I could understand it in those days, because the way they were treated, well, I had some sympathy for them. Now, what happened once, generally, we took prisoners, and sometimes we just kept one prisoner for a group of 5, 6 or so to stay with us as our servant. He had to do all the menial tasks, and he got some food, and in a way, I still think today that to have somebody like that, it's better for him than to go into the prison camp, because I can imagine most of them died there. They got very little attention, very little food. Now, we had a Russian prisoner with us, in what I'm thinking of in this village. I forgot his name now. I think Eugen, we called him. We had been ordered by our Kampfgruppenführer that at the entrance of the village we should position our pack, our cannon. And not far away there was a little cottage, and we went into that little cottage. And now it was very cold, and we got the idea, we were more or less our own masters. The Gefechtsstand of our Kampfgruppe was the other side of the village. And we thought, standing guard. One always had to have one guard at least standing at the cannon. And it was so cold, so we decided, Eugen got to go. Eugen, poor bloody Eugen. He had to be the guard. But then we thought, now, if we keep him standing there in his Russian uniform, that wouldn't be good. So we just gave him a jacket. We were nicely and warm in the house, and he had a jacket and a German coat on, and we put a steel helmet on him. And it was very unfair of us. We left him out there for hours and hours while we just were in the cottage. But Russians are tough. And Eugen, he was friendly, because we gave him good food. Well, we shared everything with him. He was a nice man. And as it so happened, retreating Romanian troops came through that village. And many Romanians speak German. They moved towards our pack. And there was Eugen. And what exactly happened, I don't know. Some of them talked to Eugen, because in German, German soldier standing at a German cannon. And, of course, Eugen didn't know one word of German. And they called an officer somehow because they couldn't get an answer out of Eugen what he was doing there. And they wanted to know something, obviously. And we hadn't noticed it, really. We just saw them moving past. We didn't know that that people were grouping around Eugen. And apparently they had asked an officer to come, who again spoke perfect German, and then they decided Eugen, he was a Russian. They somehow, I don't know whether he had the Russian form uniform underneath, I'm not quite sure. But by his way of speaking, I think in the end Eugen came out and spoke something in Russian, that he got nothing to do with his cannon and that he was standing there as a guard. And obviously they couldn't understand it, how a Russian stands there as a guard. And then one of us shouted into the cottage, here, they are taking Eugen away to shoot him or something like that. And we came rushing out and went over and said, hey, what's the matter here? And this officer, a very arrogant officer, he said, what's going on? And we said, it's a German gun position here. He said, what's this Russian doing here? He said, well, that's our business, isn't it? Got nothing to do with you. Oh, yes, it has, he said. And we said, oh, no, it hasn't here. Look, and he said, anyway, we get rid of this one first, and then we'll see what we're going to do about it. And we said, how do you mean, get rid of this one first? And he said, we shoot him. Oh, no, we said, you don't. And we actually got involved in a fight with Romanian soldiers who wanted to take him away, I think, just behind the wall and shoot him. And we rescued him.
What kind of a fight?
We took him away. Fist fight. Well, general, they were holding him and were dragging him back. Behind the gun, there was some sort of a shed. And I think they were going to shoot him there and then. And we got hold of him and pulled him away. And then one of them or one of us lashed out. I'm not quite sure. But there was quite a struggle. And the officer moved in. But we moved away. We took Eugen, I think. We took him into the cottage and we shut the door. Then later on, apparently, this Romanian officer, he was a major or colonel or something, was a middle-ranking officer. And he actually got through to our camp, our Kampfgruppenführer. And one of us had to go. I didn't. One of us had to go and see him and he understood the position and he said, oh, well, he's going to sort it out with this Romanian anyway. It's not their business. And our general opinion of the Romanians anyway was at that time pretty low because wherever they were guarding a front section, that was always where the Russians came through. You couldn't rely on them. If we knew there was a German unit on our flanks, it was pretty reliable. Before Russians could break through there, there was a fight with the Romanian. It was not the case. Suddenly we had Russians in our back, and they were always coming through where the Romanians were. So the complaint by the Romanian officer just went on deaf ears, and I think he was more or less told to bugger off.
What were your instructions about obeying orders from Romanian officers, from Romanians or Italians or Hungarians who outranked you? Were you told to obey them or not?
No, it didn't really apply because we were a German unit and also we were detached to them. Their commands could only come, if I remember rightly now, from their high officers to our higher officers and then down to us. I never know a case where they actually interfered in, they didn't dare to, in the normal working of German units. No. We never would have obeyed orders from them.
What happened next?
Well, that the retreat. It was chaos. It was anxiety, uncertainty, nobody knew what was going on, and we also sensed that our leaders didn't know either. By that time, I suppose, and it's so long ago, and one doesn't really know when things happened in relation to the capitulation of Stalingrad, but I think we knew then that Stalingrad was finished, and we also knew then, of course, that once the Russians were able to release their considerable forces, which they had to use at Stalingrad, that these forces would come west, and that sooner or later they would make contact with us. Was another interesting or strange incident. When we moved back in that winter, there was a food depot, a German food depot, and a kind of a farmyard it was. And there was barbed wire all around it, and just one main entrance with a barbed wire gate. And we could see from the outside plenty of food, and the gate was locked, and there was a small detachment of German soldiers inside. And we were at the gate, together with some others, and we wanted the food. And they said, oh, no, no, you can't come in here. And we said, why not? Because we are retreating now, and we are leaving this area, and what are you going to do with it? Are you going to load it? And no, no, we could see it. There was no chance to load it and transport it back and all that. And somebody said, it will be blown up. We said, what, blown up, all that food, and we haven't got enough, really. And they said, yes, there are orders, and whatever we say. And so we broke the gate open, and then their officer came, a funny officer. He wasn't an army officer. He was what we called Wirtschaftsführer, an economic detachment. The soldiers were ordinary Wehrmacht guards, Wehrmacht soldiers. But the man in command was this kind of Wirtschaftsführer. And he was laying the law down, and that he was going to carry out orders, and that no food was going to be distributed to anyone, only under strict orders. He said, have you got orders? If you show a slip from signed by whom do I know? And of course we didn't. And we saw all the food in there, and we could see there were packages of butter and whatnot. And we were arguing and so, and the guards say, we heard that. Click, click, their rifles went. You know, the how do you call that thing on it?
Safety rifle, catch.
The safety catch. And oh, we got angry. And then two or three SS blokes came over there, and they said, what's the matter here? And when they saw the food too, of course, they liked it. And they wanted it, and they argued with that bloke, and one of them said, look, I'm giving you an order. We are going to have that food. Whatever you say, we want that food. And that little Wirtschaftsführer, he still, no, he refused, and he was, who are you? And he was of a higher rank, apparently. And one of the SS blokes just pulled out his pistol and shot him. Bombs. He was lying there, and once he was dead. The guards, of course, I think the SS bloke said to them, now, your safety catch, come on, put it on, otherwise you're beside him. They quickly disappeared, and we went in and loaded up. I shouldn't laugh. There was that poor man who most probably had children at home shot, but it was quite a friendly relationship with the SS. We laughed and did, and we looked for the best food, and there was slaughtered pigs, bits of slaughtered pigs, and plenty of butter, and all sorts of fat and drink. You know, we found quite a few bottles of good stuff, and we loaded our Zugmaschine full of that. Well, full of that, we didn't have much room, but it was a great time, and we drove off, and everyone else did. And when we met somebody, we told them on the way, go over there, there's plenty of food. That poor bloke still was lying there behind the gate, dead. So, as I said, it was a wild, wild time. Sometimes it was very tough. It was very hard because it was very cold most of the time. Sometimes it was snowing. Then again, fine weather, snow down during the day, the sun shone. Midday, you stand against a white wall of a cottage or so. There's a certain warmth within frost. I mean, in several weeks, the thermometer never went below a freezing point. And the coldest I ever can remember, I don't know whether I mentioned it before, that an officer came around one morning and he said, it's 54 degrees minus Celsius centigrade. So you can imagine the cold, it was a problem. It was also a problem with the vehicles. My Zugmaschine, for instance, whenever we went to a place in a village or so, the first thing I did was to take the battery out and take it into the house. And then we covered it up that we had antifrost, yes, but when you have 54 degrees minus, and anyway, your antifrost is diluted because you lose water and you add some. You not always have antifrost with you. You put some water. So the danger was always of freezing up, and we drove the vehicle into haystacks and covered it up with all sorts of things. But it was a problem, and sometimes to start it in the morning. I remember before I started it, we had the old-fashioned handle, which one hasn't got anymore at a vehicle. Before we started, I always gave it to get the oil moving a bit, 5-6 times before I pressed the starting button, not to use the battery for so long. I remember once we just were on the march and we were being threatened by the Russians. We knew they were coming. They always followed us, but not in a very pressurized way. Whenever they found us, they let us go, because apparently they were not strong enough yet. But we knew that behind those who bothered us, the main Russian army, the main Red Army, was on the way. And I do remember we just through the night we were marching, and I suppose we wanted to get to some sort of a village, and then it was being found out, oh, the next village is too far away. And we moved very slowly, because with us we had some horses and some on foot. And with my vehicle we always went ahead a little bit, half a mile ahead, and took up kind of position there in case the Russians should come. And then we waited till the others followed us and went past us. And then we passed them again, general security. And then I remember one night, it must have been midnight, 2 o'clock or what, and then just command came. We were about 100. Stop here. And there was nothing. It was like a snow desert, and it was snowing, the wind was cold. And we said, what, here, stop here, how long? And I think it was an Oberleutnant who gave us the order. He was a good man, he was concerned about us. But he said, no, we got to stop here. There were certain reasons he gave, and, we couldn't question the orders of an officer. So we stopped there, but I remember on a white plain, no bush, no tree, no house, flat, nothing. Bitter winds, bitter cold. And we just stood there. You couldn't sit down or anything. You couldn't sit and rest. And what we did, we had some blankets, and we went 2, 3, 4 of us together and pulled the blanket over us so that we developed a little bit of warmth. Then sometimes somebody laid down because we were exhausted, and others went round, kicked him up, because if he would have stayed down in the snow for any length of time, let's say half an hour, that would have been your lot. So that was a general situation, and it was not a nice one to be in, as you can imagine. But then spring came. We saw the first touches of spring. And but with spring, then of course the weather was bad, because as long you got in hard underground, it's okay, you can move around, you can do something about cold weather conditions. But when it gets muddy, that is terrible. When it thaws, and I remember, it was terrible. Everything gets in wet, and you haven't got a chance to dry, and the Russians are pressing you, and it's so long ago, one has difficulty to remember exactly when what happened when. But I do remember we went into one village, and there was a funk troop, a radio troop was in this village house, and we all stood around because it was warm in there. But I think it was during this spring weather, when it was wet outside, wet and cold and damp, and sometimes the sun shone, and sometimes it drizzled and rained and grey. And there was this Funker, as we called him, tipping his talks with others, and then somebody wrote it down, what he got on the Morse or whatever it was called. And we heard all what was going on around about Russian troop movements. And it was dark, I think it was late evening or night, and we could see it. He was doing this with his fingers, and then he got the messages through, and they came down on a bit of paper. And one message came through that a Russian battalion I think they said something like 300 men or something like that, or 600 men, is coming close to the German line, and it is approaching, never forget that name of the village, it's approaching Kutachevsky, the village of Kutachevsky. And he was putting that down and handed it to somebody, Russian battalion approaching the village of Kutachevsky. And then one of us said, what's the name of this village? And somebody said, Kutachevsky, oh my God! And we went out, and the Russians already were in the village. And there was such a chaos. Now, they were running in the village street, we were running in the village street. It was no good shooting anyone unless you knew exactly who was who, because it was dark, and when it's dark, all cats are grey, as we say. And you bumped into to Russian soldiers, and you tried to shoot, but everyone was kind of frightened with a rifle. What can you do in conditions like that? Oh, there was all what happened. We rushed out. We somehow managed. We rushed out of the village. The Russians drove us out. It was a terrible chaos. Kutachevsky. Never forget that.
Kutachevsky or
Kutachevsky. The name, I suppose on a good Russian map, perhaps, where the villages are on. I never saw that. It was a small village. But it was during that time, anyway, after the retreat, well, roughly you can say between Stalingrad and Kursk, because looking at it later, the time we were in now, that was the time between the battles of Stalingrad and Kursk, half a year. Roughly half a year lay between those two. So that was the situation. But then summer came, and somehow, early summer, May, June, things look up, and it always seemed that German forces, as whether they were superior in summer. Up to then, I suppose, in general, it had been so. Whether it had something to do with the training, so I don't know. But now we moved into a time, I think, where we will talk about it from now on, that the Russians proved that they were not only our equal and in some ways better in winter. Now, this catching up with us in many ways and bettering us and being just as good as us, it now showed itself in summer. We noticed they must have gained enormous confidence by having beaten us at Stalingrad. The way they attacked, It was a different battle formation they used now, different tactics, and they had used in the first time of that campaign when we pressed them back. They had gained great confidence, and every one of us realized it, and we had lost confidence.
How did their tactics change, precisely?
Well, in the foremarch, as we called them, our advance into Russia, there were so many instances that we could see, oh, they are bloody fools in many ways, the way they defended us. So I think we were, at that time, really better trained. They defended a village where it was undefendable, or they attacked somehow just because they got some sort of an order, because some of the higher officers had given the order, a line must be held under all circumstances, and we must retake that town or so. And we realized it was foolish. But quite often, the things they did, and because they did these foolish things, they were beaten again. Now, it seemed as whether our decision was being... The high command, Stavka, I think, allowed decisions to be made more locally. That middle rank officers were allowed to make their own decisions according to the circumstances and the locality. Often on the foremarch, they had moved into traps, which we almost laughed about. How can anyone be so silly and move into a trap like this? And all these things, they didn't happen anymore. They had learned a great deal, and as the further development of the war, the campaign proved, they indeed had learned a great deal. I don't know whether it was at that time, whether there were some changes in their higher officers. Chukov, we knew, was in high command on the whole section. The whole section there in the south was commanded by Chukov. Up to Chukov, Timoshenko had been the field marshal, and Timoshenko had been beaten several times by us, though I understand he was a very able officer. But another of whom we knew, General Vatutin, and we had great respect for these generals. But it seemed that a new generation of officers had moved into the field, had taken command, and that they had learned a great deal from their experiences and, of course, from the German example, if you can call it that way, because now the boot was on the other foot. While they had been retreating up to then, for the first time, now they really were advancing. And as our advances into Russia had, whatever one might think of it, had been very successful, I think they used kind of the same tactics. They were no fools. They had learned from it.
So what happened next?
Well, the general situation moved towards the Battle of Kursk. Of course, we were not being told about that. As in so many ways, sometimes I have taken part in battles, and afterwards I was told, oh, was there, that was a battle of so-and-so, was a battle of so-and-so. One didn't realize it, but reading about it afterwards and talking about it afterwards, we now were moving to the Battle of Kursk, not only strengthening our HKL, but there was a general German attempt to reverse the whole situation in that area anyway, through making a stand and attacking the Russian main forces at Kursk.